Thank you so much for coming. I hope you enjoy this session, as I very much did enjoy the session last year. Last year I did a presentation here as well, and it was about 2D game art. And that was the thing that I was doing back then, because I was transitioning from some games that I used to make for PlayStation 2 for one of the first game companies in Portugal, Eworks. And then I shifted to 2D because of the casual games, and the Flash market was mainly 2D games. So I got that's sort of where I got all my learning process for 2D. Where I started was with Tiago Souza using, and True Dimensions was the first amateur team in Portugal, one of the first amateur teams in Portugal. And some of the people from that generation are still making games today. I was like the second generation. The first one was late 80s, mid 90s. People were mostly doing remakes of foreign games, trying to port them into other platforms. Then the second generation was when the Pentiums came around, and pixel shading was very cool, and everyone was sort of starting to look at it. And Tiago Souza and Diogo Teixeira, some guys that worked with me, were already looking into that and making some awesome stuff. So they needed 3D models and they needed 3D technology. And because I was still starting, because I knew how to draw, because that was the thing that I was doing as a hobby, and they started talking about 3D. And I used some really early DOS versions of 3D Studio. It wasn't 3D Studio Max, it was just 3D Studio V3 and V4, was the ones that I used. And the concept of low polygon modeling back then was almost non-existent, because it's just modeling, because the softwares couldn't really hold that much polygons, so we were just doing 3D models. And this is the sort of stuff that I grew up with. I'm now working in NDOT Studio, and we're starting now to do 3D games in Unity. So it's really cool to get back to the 3D. So this is the things that I started to look at when I was learning. This is from Paul Steed. This was the perfect marriage in 3D art. This was Paul Steed and Kenneth Scott, both artists at id Software. Paul Steed, unfortunately, has already passed away, I think, 3 years ago. But he was one of the first, what they call was the first cutting-edge 3D modeler, 3D artist. Because his process was pretty much looking at something. And you, when you looked at his models, you could see this guy gets it. He looks at 3D modeling, he looks at the concept of low poly, and he gets it. He knows what he has to do to make something look cool. If you look at the wireframes of this specific, well, any model from Quake 3 Arena, is they're really weird to look at. Because nowadays you look at models and everything is nice. There's loops everywhere. You can clearly see where the mesh is going. Because you're allowed to, because you can do, for example, John Marston from Red Dead Redemption has, I think, around 16,000 polygons. I got the original model from the internet, from some obscure searches. And you can clearly see that the mesh is really well done, it's really well prepared. At this stage, it wasn't. It was, if we can't get a polygon there, we won't. If we can, let's do it. And the texture is painted by Kenneth Scott, which is an amazing artist. And one thing I did with Kenneth Scott was I looked at his textures and I started to draw them myself. I literally copied them. I tried to paint the same textures that he did on Photoshop. And through that process, you kind of learn a few things. Because you have to pick the same colors that he picked. And when you're looking at the color picking going, this is going to work. And then you paint it, it works. So you kind of see this guy has a different approach, right? There's a different mindset than I do. And that's what I want to learn. And then there's this sort of stuff. I remember thinking that her legs looked really nice back when I started playing. And it's not because they're female legs or anything like that, but because of the shape, the silhouette and the whole form of the body. And there's a later model, she looks a bit more cartoony, and they sort of messed it up. But as you can see, for example, the breasts is like, I don't know, 8 polygons. And it still worked. Why? Because she was mostly seen from the back. Of course you'd say, but it's such a round surface, obviously, you should want to waste some polygons there to make it loyal to the original. But the reason is, you never saw them unless you went against the corner and forced the camera to be in front of her. We all did it. And and I remember looking really nice. This is from Quake 1, okay? Quake 1, the animations that they had, they didn't have skin in the models. What they did was they animated the models in 3D, and they took snapshots of the mesh. And in-game, they would interpolate the positions of the vertices so that they would do an animation. Sometimes I think, some models I think they didn't. They just went tuck, 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 tuck from frame to frame. And the last, I think the first frame, the frame zero, was the mesh that they had flattened so that they could paint over it. And the reason was there was hardly any UVW mapping software. They couldn't flat out a model back then. So they would take this sort of snapshot, paint over it, and then just print this on a model. And the weirdest example is the Rottweiler, because you couldn't really get a front shot of the dog. So instead of doing this, they did sort of this. They tilted the dog a little bit so they could paint underneath. Okay? I'm going to ask, I have to ask you to join me in a little joke, because the guy next to me is my ex-partner, and he said, I'm going to have a clapping contest with you. Okay? So one, two, three. Okay. So they're probably going to do the same in a second. Okay, so the great thing about low polygon modeling is that it's an extremely quick feedback thing. You can do something and instantly you see what's it's changing. In this case, I didn't count the polygons on this, but it's a square with a subdivision on each direction. So you make a cut in one direction, It's the thing is, like, you talk about Led Zeppelin or Rolling Stones if you're talking about them. But if you're in 3D art, One Direction comes up quite a lot in a conversation. It ruins your day. So you could change, for example, okay, do a little exercise with me here, because there was this thing, a teacher did a scribble on the board and asked the students of 9th, 10th grade to say, what is this? And they went, oh, it's just a scribble. I said, that's a shame, because I showed this to kids from fifth grade, and they said, oh, it's a cloud, it's a plane, it's whatever, it's a spaceship, because they would see it. They would project the imagination there. And low poly, especially ultra-low polygon modeling, does that for you. We could make a backpack. Okay, can you see the backpack there? Okay, it's missing the loops, but you could do the subway, a start of a subway model. You could do a milk carton. You could do a piece of bread. You could do an American barn. Tombstone, for example, this is using exactly the same polygons, the exactly same starting model. A very simplistic car, and a ham for Miguel Vicente, as we've been talking about in the internet, okay? So this is a model that I did following the work of Paul Steed and Kenneth Scott. This is in maybe 2003. It's a 700 polygon model, okay? And you can see the wireframes here. So it's fairly simplistic, and I got away with a lot of detail by putting a mask on him so that I didn't have to model all the nose and all the details. So that was a trick. Okay, sometimes you make those tricks. For example, Master Chief from Halo, the first Halo, had a very polygonal armor, which was a good decision. It's probably a technical artist and a concept designer decision. Let's make it like that so we can do more with less. And this is the Warthog from Halo that I remodeled using the original model that I also got from the internet with some obscure searching once again. It's a trend. And I don't know the model, but the model was that they had all the three levels of detail of the same model in the same file. And because it was converted, it was all over the place. It was a mess. So I used this basically as a blueprint, and I remodeled everything. And I had to reapply the UVWs because I didn't have the UVWs. And there's a lot of parts that I don't know what are, like this is black because I didn't even know what that was. I think it's the hooks at the front. That bit there on the windscreen doesn't even have a texture. I don't know what part of the UVWs that is. And then this was a project that we did at Game Dev PT because I thought about making a library of models for people to download and to use in their projects, for programmers to download. And then a guy suggested, why don't we make a game and I'll teach people to program and he'll teach people to model. And then we can start practicing on leading teams. That's also cool. So this was one of the cars that I did. It's about 120 polygons minus the wheels, because the wheels always take a lot of models. And one of the things that I did with the wheels was I sort of slanted them. I rotated them a little bit, because if it's an eight-sided cylinder, you can clearly see the eight sides breaking. If you rotate them slightly, the edge in the middle that you don't see sort of creates another edge, and you get now 16 all around. 8 plus 8, yeah. This is a game that I did with Ben Olding, which is a guy that's doing Flash games. I collaborated with him for a while. He's a really quick programmer, and I really liked working with him. And this is 3D in Flash. There was a 3D engine that came out. It was called Flare 3D. And it did have some shaders, some very simplistic materials that you'd use in 3ds Max, and you could see them live in the viewport, in 3ds Max viewport, which was great because you could really see the effect right away. And everything here you see works in real time. And one of the levels, well, especially if you look at the characters, they have outlines. This is something that I didn't really want, but he insisted maybe the characters will stand out a little more. Let's have a cartoon outline around them. And we didn't have a shader for that, because nowadays you just drag a shader onto a model and you get an outline. So what I did was, I think I remembered a game where I sort of figured out how they did it, which was a game called 13. It was a comic book sort of game, a shooter, And what I did was I looked at the game and I figured out sometimes the camera would clip through the model or something. And what I did, what they did was they had a model, they made a copy, they inflated it a bit, and then they reversed the normal. So the face wouldn't be seen from here, it would be seen from the inside. And what programmers tell me is that that's what's actually happening in some outline shaders for 3D models. That's what the graphics card is doing for you. But I had to do it by hand. So you can see clearly the mesh on the other side of the model being rendered, while on this side I have the mesh normally being rendered for the screen. Another thing that we had that we wanted to have that the shaders didn't have was reflections. Okay, so I have reflections in this game. This is a screenshot from 3ds Max, but in game and Flash it works exactly the same. And the way that we did this was something that I saw on Vice City, which was very weird, because I saw some bottles on the table and the reflections of the bottles. But as I stepped away, the bottles were underneath the table, as you can see here. So what I have is another copy of the model underneath, and the lake is a hole in the mesh. And what I do is I put a texture over it with a slight tint so that you can see that there's some sort of moss on the water or that the water has some color. Okay, so it's really just smoke and mirrors. Well, not mirrors, because there's no shading. So it's not even smoke, it's just, it's a hole. But it's visual, it's basically a trick. So it's tricking people into thinking that they're seeing a reflection when they're not. This is another model. This is only relevant because this is a fairly high, well, it's not high poly right now. You would call it mid-res. Or if you're working for next gen, this would actually be low poly, because this is about 3,000 or 5,000, I can't really tell you. But what I did here was I had this project for a game called Bruce Ali, which is a mix between Bruce Lee and Muhammad Ali. So it has, that's why it has the boxing clubs. And I figured that I wanted to do a lot of animations and I didn't want to do them in 2D, because I would either have to do them in blocks by rotating stuff, and I couldn't do a torso rotation for a really big impact on the kick or the punch. So I thought, let's do it in 3D, animate everything in 3D, and then render frames from any direction that I want. And I figured that I should do a mesh that was good enough for me to light and get volume out, but I didn't want to do the texture because the texture would be more work, and the texture would have a lighting assigned to it. So if you have it light from another side, then the direction of the light on the texture could clash with that and make things look a little weird. So this is the mesh. So yeah, I would say 5,000. So you can see that there's detail on the face. Not so much here, because the smoothing groups would sort of smooth this out for the render. And there's just enough detail here that I can get a render like this, okay? And I'm not sure if I have the file here, but there's a lot of animation. This wasn't the real size of the character. The character would be really tiny on the screen, or fairly tiny, it would be 100 by 100 pixels. So you could see that this was more than enough for me to represent this lighting, the rim lighting, and then a fill light on the character as well, and still get that fluid animation from the 3D model. These are the 3D models for a game that I was doing, that I did in Flash, which is 2D game, but the models were 3D, and then I got renders from them. And you can see the detail I have on the mesh, okay? And this isn't even animated because it would be static on the screen, but I did want them to look better. So what I did was I just painted a texture over this, but this is just for you to see the amount of mesh that I need, amount of 3D that I need, to be able to paint a texture. So now I can see, especially the guy on the right has a lot more interest on the face. There's a suggestion that there's some folds on the skin that you can't see on the mesh that well. Fun fact, this isn't a horse. This is a bench that looks like a horse. If you move the samurai on the map, he would pick up the bench and carry the horse with him. So it's really the horse that's riding the samurai. This is another method that I sort of, you know, I really didn't invent any of these things. I was just able to use them in projects. This was another test for a prototype for Ben Olding. So you can see that it's 1,500 polygons, so 1,500 polygons. And then what I did is in Mudbox, I think it was, I painted over some detail because I wanted that detail for the lighting, because I didn't want to do the same effort that I did with Bruce Ali. And I know that it was going to be a dark game, so I wouldn't be able to see any of the texture. And the ninja was supposed to be more like a silhouette and have some really nice rim lighting. And the really nice rim lighting I was able to get with some normal map shading. I don't know if you can see the folds on the legs. And there's a few bugs there with the smoothing on the sort of the where the crotch is, because I didn't bring the smoothing groups there. But again, it's just another, because I can really quickly rig this. I can put a skeleton on this, rig it really quick, because there's not that many vertices, and then just animate it any way I want and get renders out of it. And that's the actual size that it would have on the screen. This is a game that we're doing, that we did. We're presenting this today at InOt. And it's the world is 3D because the concept of the game, we thought it would need 3D, okay? Because the way you played it and the necessity to be able to see the track ahead of you without it taking so much space on the screen, we would do this in 3D. So what we did is we have this van, which you can change the colors by buying new skins. And this model has about 1,000 polygons, including the wheels in this case. And we have some really nice physics-based rendering shaders from Unity. And this model, we can get some really nice renderings from. Even though we don't use this in the game, we thought of using this for a devlog or something. But this is the mesh for the van that you just saw. So again, not really that detailed, especially on the fenders, where you would think that it needs to be really round. And this is the model that you see in game. So you can see the shift, okay, in amount of polygons. And this is more than enough for me to be able to show you a van on this screenshot right there, because that's how tiny it's going to be on the game, okay? So again, I'm taking in consideration production. Even though I made that big van, people would say, well, we just use that. Well, maybe I could use it a little less so it doesn't take all the memory. And this is the texture that I did, and I kept the same, even though the mesh isn't the same, I made the UVWs on the other van to match the texture so that I would do this one and then just export a smaller version, and that would be it. These are all the assets that make up the cubes, and these all share one texture. This was in the process, I think it was 2 days work of me just completely, you know, leather glasses, the ones they put on horses, just me looking at the screen and figuring where I was going to put everything on the UVW map. So I did the UVW map before, the texture before I did the UV coordinates. Okay, so when I did the UV coordinates, I had to go in and put, you can see some of the shadows painted on the surfaces because the bales of hay would be on the top. And that sort of effect, these are all the pieces meshed together just as a weird image. And you can see the shadows being applied. I most of the time try and paint the shadows on the models. This is for another project that we have at InDot of a 3D game, sort of an arena kind of game. And this is the altar where the player goes to sort of heal himself up back again. And this is the difference between the concept and the 3D model, the end result. Obviously, I'm missing a particle system in the center. But as you can see, the lighting is painted on the texture because I know it's always going to be active except for the particle. The particle will show up when the player is on it. And we did a few changes because I had the walls as big as here, but when I put the character here, because of the camera angle, half of the character would be occluded. So I had to shorten the walls. And I also did this in a sort of painterly style, like hand-painted texture, because I really like the style that they use in League of Legends and World of Warcraft. I really feel that's a cool style for this type of game. And this is from the same game. This is sort of the wall for the arena. And if I take away the texture, you can see that's just a bunch of lines. And if I'd showed this flat, which I stupidly didn't take a screenshot, but if this was flat, it'd be a very uninteresting surface to look at. But gradually adding these sort of drawings. So the texture is also very, very important. And this is why, for example, Tiago Souza right now is at Crytek. He's taking the spot that Carmack used to take. So he basically replaced his idol, which is the same as me replacing Slash and Guns N' Roses, for example. Something like that, okay, something big like that. And I would love to be able to, my idea was I want to be able to replace Paul Steed and Kenneth Scott, which is obviously never going to happen ever, well, once because Paul Steed is dead, but also because they're really two talented, really very talented guys. And I can only aspire to try and do something the same. These are 2D concepts that I painted in Photoshop for some tents for the same game, where if you walk in on this one, this is intelligence, that one is agility, and that one is strength. So if you walk in, you level up that specific stat. And I did them in 3D, as you can see. I tried to match them as closely. As you can see, the rim light that you saw, or at least the sort of moonlight that you see, especially on the green tent and the red tent, I was convinced that I should paint them on the texture. They're on a different layer. If later on we add lighting, I can just go in, erase that layer, and bake the textures, or export the textures again. But I still get that feel. Now I know that the especially the area on the green one, that they are slightly bowed because I get some of that rim light. And this is the process that I use usually. Okay, so I start with, in this case, I started with a rough sketch and then made things a little more interesting. And then I went and then shaded everything because I really wanted to see how important, for example, the boots here, I think they're not important enough. And I think the player should be able to see that they can buy footwear that will increase their movement speed. So this is probably not that good. So and then I colored everything in, then I did the 3D mesh, then I did some sort of color key for the mesh. and bake some light. And I'm going to show you the texture first, and then I'll show you the textured model, because there's a few interesting things about the texture. One of them is the fact that I have some really white lines around this. And why? Because the vials on the table aren't transparent. They are actually painted. And when you look at them, you kind of get the idea that they have this reflection on the edge. But it's just a line that I painted on the texture, because I know that this is going to be seen mostly from this angle. And even if it's not, I'm going to put it on the other side of the screen and slightly rotate it so that it matches the angle of the light. Even this light here on the pole is actually painted on the texture. And I think that helps a very low poly model to become more than it is. In this case, and this is another example of using perspective on a texture. For example, this surface here that goes from here to here is a flat surface. But I thought it was very boring, the fact that it was flat. So I painted it from perspective, sort of a spot that was extruded in. And if you see from the other angle, okay, so this is seen from the other angle, you know that it's distorted. And I did the same here with a recessed light so that they look like they're in, but this is a flat plane again. And the only way that you do this is you go into 3ds Max, you set up the camera where the player's gonna be, and in this case, I was very lucky because the camera is static. This was a VR project, and the only thing you could do was just look around. So I knew that the camera was going to be exactly in this point, so that I could paint the texture accordingly. I did a few sketch, a few lines, and once I got that working, I just painted the texture in. I later added texture or color, because this was fairly complicated that I had to do first in black and white so that I know I'm not messing anything up. Okay, so now you know how these reflections were made, right? Because they were done, the car flipped upside down. And this is a 126 polygons car, minus the plus the wheels. The wheels add a bit more. And this was for just an idea that I had for maybe a driving game in very old cell phones that could still render 3D. And I wanted to do something that was really low poly. And maybe you can help me out. If I'm going to say the names of the cars, and maybe you can go, oh, yeah, that looks like. This is a Ford Mustang. This is an AC Cobra. This one is a McLaren F1. That's an F40. That's an Aston Martin. That's not the best one. That really needs the texture, because the Aston Martin is a very smooth car. And the one at the top is the GD40, and then it's a Porsche 911. Ooh. And this is the GD40 rendered out with the texture painted, again with some reflections that I think I just did for beauty shot, because I wouldn't be able to do this on the game unless I put a road with holes, and this would be they would be like puddles of water. That could work, yeah. I'm gonna write that idea down. In this case, I even had some other ideas for bringing this into Flash. Again, with Ben Olding, he thought it would be cool, but we never really got to do anything. So this is just a portfolio piece. This is the mesh for the car, as you can see. I painted the texture. I think I painted it at 256, and then I shrunk it to 128. For some reason, I feel like it's the magic number. And this isn't mine, okay? Right away, I'm going to state this is from Kenneth Feher. Kenneth Feher started out as a pixel artist, and then he moved into 3D because some games for the DS were coming out with 3D, and he thought he should increase his skill set, which is a good idea, to be able to get more freelance jobs. And what I like about this is that the way that he did the fact that, well, the vehicle ends here, so I'm going to do just black to go around with the wheel. And it actually acts as a shadow. You can almost see that the car has a shadow on the ground, but it's actually the mesh going all the way to the ground. And that's the texture there, packed as well as he could. And one thing about doing pixel art textures is that most of the time they'll be orthogonal. They will either be vertical pieces or horizontal pieces, and then the mesh is going to be the thing that sort of cuts them off, okay? This is something else that I did. This, again, is a sort of, this is low poly. This is ultra low poly. This is just low poly. And the mesh that this car has is just enough that I can get some reflections out of it, and I'll show you. This is the local texture, just the local color, assuming that there's going to be a light from above. And what I do is I have a shader, again, from Flare 3D, where I use spherical reflections to create this sort of effect of rim light, and that gives the car that sort of glossy look. And I use a specific one for the rims, and you can see the local texture there. And I made a whole bunch of these, okay? So the Lotus Elise, the GTS Viper, and the R8 Audi. I also did this sort of as a fun thing to do. It's a very low poly plane. I deleted it. This is the mesh. I deleted the poly count, but it was less than 200 polygons. And this is the texture for it, as you can see, okay? It's this big. There you go. And again, this is sort of pixelated. It's fairly close to pixel art because I wanted to do something like that. And this, again, is not my work. It's from Tom Tallien. But it inspired me to make something like it. But as you can see, the stats for 193 triangles, which is polygons, but people try to specify triangles because sometimes people will call a quad a polygon, and that's two polygons. But as you can see, the texture is also very simplified. The pupil of the eye is one pixel, again. So it motivated me to do this. This is, again, John Marston, who is the deadliest man in the West, the dangerous, most dangerous man with the gun. Still afraid of his wife. It should tell you a bit about marriage. This is 556 triangles, again, 128 diffuse texture. And I felt this was fairly low, okay? I still have enough polygons here that I can do this, the knee stretching. But then I thought, what if I could do a little less? So I did. And you can see you can't see the wing of the hat because it's bended up, or it's bent up, but it's 355 triangles. You can see that the mesh is fairly different, and now I don't have that piece of mesh to fold the knee. What I do is, sometimes you will have this sort of line. What I do like that. So when it bends, it still looks like a foot without the mesh sort of twisting on itself. And that's it. That's it. So questions, please.